Welcome to Why So Weekend, WYSO's weekly radio magazine. I'm Jerry Kenny. On today's program, we'll visit a garden that's helping adults with disabilities become more independent. We'll talk to Dr. Kent Youngman with the Mental Health and Recovery Board of Clark, Greene, and Madison counties about the crisis intervention team training for police officers in those counties. That training wrapped up a week ago. And you'll hear reaction from Miami Valley residents about the Obama administration's call for military action in Syria. Up first, Unmanned Aerial Systems, or UAS, was the focus of an informational meeting Wednesday in Xenia. Ohio has partnered with Indiana and applied to become one of six national centers for unmanned systems, and Congressman Mike Turner, along with the Dayton Development Coalition, held the meeting to build awareness about what UAS could bring to Ohio.
Right now, the Federal Aviation Administration is in the process of selecting these test sites to help the industry safely move into national airspace. Unmanned aerial systems, which includes what are commonly called drones, could be used for anything from surveillance to first responder uses to helping farmers detect blight on their crops. Congressman Mike Turner says if Dayton is picked, the region and the state will reap the benefits.
This is an emerging industry. This is like the innovation of the automobile. We're there, we're at the table, and we're going to be part of the explosion.
The Dayton Development Coalition projects that the UAS industry could grow over $82 billion over the next 10 years. Maurice McDonald with the coalition says he's confident Ohio can get FAA approval, in part because of research centers at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, as well as the commercial businesses surrounding the defense industry and manufacturing.
And if you look at the assets that Ohio has and all the capabilities we have today, we're already way down that path where a lot of organizations and a lot of states are not. They may have one major capability. We have several.
McDonald says the region is planning to capitalize on UAS regardless of whether or not Ohio is designated as a test site. The FAA is expected to make its decision by the end of this year. For WYSO, I'm Emily McCord.
And coming up in just a few moments, we'll hear more from Emily McCord on what's taking place on Ohio's political front. A recent U.S. Census Bureau report shows one in three children nationwide grew up in a fatherless home. A local organization in Clark County helps local men become better fathers. The organization has just received a new grant that will help the group called Urban Light Ministries serve more people.
The Ohio Commission on Fatherhood awarded Urban Light Ministries a four-year, $420,000 grant to partner with Ohio Job and Family Services to offer fatherhood programs in Clark, Montgomery, and Greene counties. Only six awards were given to agencies around the state. Urban Light CEO Eli Williams says the fatherhood improvement program is called POPS Project 2.0. Williams says children who grow up with a father actively involved in their lives tend to have better outcomes.
They're more likely to not drop out of school. They're more likely to actually achieve in school. They're less likely to use drugs, join gangs, get pregnant, and the kinds of things that can sidetrack a child.
More than 300 fathers and families have participated in the fatherhood programming since 2006. Urban Lights hopes to add at least 200 more with the new grant. For WYSO, I'm Wayne Baker reporting.
U.S. Senator Rob Portman met with farmers in the Dayton area Wednesday to talk about the Farm Bill. The bill, which is up for renewal, subsidizes both agribusiness and food stamps.
A few dozen farmers gathered at a family farm south of Dayton to meet the senator. The farmers want a new bill passed soon to protect crop insurance, a federally subsidized program that helps farmers cope when nature destroys their crops. But Portman recently voted against the Senate version of the omnibus bill.
Most people, including me, want a farm bill. I was not able to vote for the Senate farm bill because it didn't have the reforms I thought were necessary in what is 80% of the farm bill now, which is the nutrition side, food stamps, and so on.
Food stamps are the clincher. Portman wants $12 billion in cuts to the program beyond the $4 billion in cuts that did make it into the Senate bill. The cost of the federal food stamp program, or SNAP, has doubled since 2008. But the number of people enrolled has gone up, too, from 28 million in 2008 to 46 million last year. About half of the recipients are children, and most live near or below the poverty line. Congress has until October 1st to agree on a new version of the bill. Lewis Wallace, WYSO.
Congress will face a choice about whether to approve President Obama's call to use military force in Syria when it returns to session next week. This week, WYSO News Director Emily McCord spoke with Jessica Werman, a reporter from the Columbus Dispatch based in D.C., about all of this.
I know that Ohio lawmakers weren't in session, but still, are you getting a pulse on what our representatives are thinking about what to do in Syria?
You know, I am. Actually, right when last week when President Obama indicated that he was going to seek congressional authorization, one of the first things that I and my colleague Jack Tory did was start calling our delegation just to find out their sense of, you know, where they are on this. And it's basically, there's a real reluctance. There are folks who kind of concede, well, yeah, I might be able to be convinced, but in large part, most of them seem to have really grave reservations about this, which means I kind of don't know how this goes in the House. I'm not sure exactly how this plays out.
Is this a party line issue, or is this something that everybody has different concerns that they're bringing to the table?
Kind of no. This is sort of the rare occasion when people aren't just, where Republicans aren't bucking President Obama because he's President Obama so much as, you know, Democrats also have their concerns about engaging in a war. I mean, you remember, Iraq and Afghanistan were not exactly very popular conflicts towards the end. Now, the one notable exception who's kind of offered a fairly full-throated endorsement is House Speaker John Boehner. And he met with the president earlier this week and said he, you know, supports this engagement. So this kind of puts him in a tricky spot, too, because he's, you know, he's going to have to deal with a lot of lawmakers who are really concerned about engaging in a military effort in Syria.
And interestingly, Senator Portman has indicated he would be willing to support a limited strike, but he feels that he doesn't want to go it alone. He wants to get more international support. I talked to Congressman Mike Turner earlier this week, who is really adamant that he's not going to vote, that he will vote no on this. And his condition is that there's any action on sequestration.
Yes, yes. I kind of joke with the congressman's staff that, you know, the sequestration is sort of the bell, and obviously necessarily so, but it's kind of the bell that he kind of keeps ringing, because this is obviously a very big concern with Wright-Patterson in his district. This is something he talks about at every opportunity, and his concern is, why are we paying for a war when we can't really pay for the military efforts now, because we've had these huge sweeping cuts. There were furloughs, though not as bad as predicted. His concern is, are we sending a military that's ready for war to war? So that's one, and that's kind of, he's sort of a little bit unique there, because you don't hear the other lawmakers talking about sequestration. He's definitely linking this to sequestration, and then he seems pretty firmly opposed at this point. He's not offering a lot of wiggle room.
Now, the Senate committee offered their resolution. The Senate will vote on that. The House committee is going to do something similar, and we have an Ohio lawmaker, as I understand it, that's serving on that committee. And you've been hearing what he's having to say?
We do. Earlier this week, the House Foreign Affairs Committee had a hearing, and Steve Shabbat, who is from Cincinnati, but whose district kind of goes into the Dayton region, he was there. He did not really. He was pretty noncommittal. He made it clear he had some serious reservations about this, but then there's sort of a, you know, I mean, there's a lot of weighing here. First of all, the concern I'm hearing from lawmakers, not just Shabbat, but others, is, you know, who's the good guy here? I mean, Assad is clearly not, but the rebels in some cases are tied to Al-Qaeda. So who are we supporting here? But then on the other hand, you know, there's always the other hand. There's this concern that if chemical weapons get into the hands of terrorists, that poses a grave threat to the United States.
Well, what are the political ramifications for our Ohio lawmakers in Congress right now?
One of the things that I think is really will be interesting to watch will be how this plays out for Speaker Boehner. He's in a strange position lately. There's been a lot of kind of rebellion from some of the more conservative members of his party. I guess one thing I will be watching is, how does this reflect on him? I mean, is he going to be tasked with really bringing the Republicans to the table? Will he be able to get a majority of the Republicans? You know, the Ohioans that I cover traditionally stand with a few exceptions, stand with Boehner pretty regularly and pretty, you know, they're pretty loyal. But talking to him now, they've got really big concerns about voting for an authorization of war.
I've been speaking with Jessica Werman. She's a reporter for the Columbus Dispatch based in Washington, D.C. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
All we are saying is give peace a chance.
Call your rep.
Vote no.
On Saturday, local peace activists and members of Dayton's Syrian community held a rally against military interventions in Syria. A small but passionate group of about 50 people stood along Main Street at Courthouse Square, holding signs with slogans like Honk for Peace and No Attack on Syria. One of the event organizers, Paris Hobbs, flanked by fellow protesters, called out the group's message to drivers and pedestrians.
No more war. Call your reps. Vote no. Please call.
I spoke with Paris about what they hope to accomplish with the rally.
We are out here rallying for peace and urging people to call their senators and their House representatives to vote no on Obama's request for military strikes in Syria. They are going to be voting this week. Most of the senators are on the fence or leaning towards no from Ohio. We are urging them to vote no. No more war, no more bombs.
And what kind of response are you getting for the rally?
We kind of threw this together last minute on Wednesday. We're getting a great response. As you can see, we've got a turnout, maybe 40, 50 people here. We'd like to plan another one. Depends on what happens this week in Congress, but we'd like to plan a bigger one with a little bit more lead time into the planning. There are ones going on in Cincinnati and across the country today, and we just kind of wanted to join in and give people in Dayton an outlet to let their voice be heard. The American people do not want this, and they're going ahead with it anyway, and we absolutely have to stop them from doing this.
The agreement on this is crossing political lines.
Absolutely. We've learned these lessons before with Iraq. If the excuses they're putting forth for going in are truly there, use international law, get with other countries, prosecute the criminal behavior there, but don't go in and bomb. That does nothing. Bombing does not promote peace, and that's what we should be doing in America. We reached out to the local Syrian community just to let them know that we're with them. Our hearts are breaking for them, their family, and their homeland and what's going on over there. And we certainly don't want to make it worse by bombing. So we wanted to reach out to them, and they were very responsive. And so I think some of them are going to speak. We have local peace activists that would like to speak about just peace in general. So we're going to get together, kind of have an educational rally. And I think the energy's there, and people are so happy that we're organizing something.
And you said that your efforts are not going to stop here.
That's right. We're going to see what happens, encourage people to call this week, their representatives, and we'll see what happens with the vote. If they vote to go ahead, we'll be back probably later this month.
Paris, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Beth Salama is a Syrian American living in Centerville. She also helped organize the rally.
I am here to tell the American people the truth about having another war. And any interference now, any United States interference in Syria, is not going to help solve any problems. Any interference would cause killing more innocent people, would cause killing more of the Syrian children. And that's not going to help them. Any interference in an attack way is going to do more harm by having more enemies for the United States around the world. Any interference also, and that's the worst part, is going to strengthen Al-Qaeda. And those are the same people who would come back and attack us here in home. So that's why we're here. We wanted all the American people to reach out to their representative and stop the war in Syria.
And you don't believe that the government has made a strong enough case to act now, and would you rather see them wait for other countries and finish the investigation?
The point here is not who dropped bombs or who used chemicals or who is killing. The point here is you don't destroy another country by killing. In my opinion, and in many Syrian and American people who knows the truth, opinion, if the United States really wants to help the Syrian people, if they want to help the world, they should help them in a peaceful way. If they interfere in a military way, even if they don't send soldiers, boots on the ground, any military interference would cause more harm, would cause more killing. So I think the way that should be done is trying peacefully, talking to the people there in Syria, talking to the government in Syria. We're smarter than this. We don't want to get involved. We don't want to cause more lives to be lost over there or here, actually. No.
And can I ask you, do you have a personal ties to Syria?
I am Syrian American, yes, and I lived in the United States for 16 years. Yeah, Syria is always in my heart, as America is, and I always said I'm very, very proud to be Syrian and American. But really, right now, I'm not sure. I'm very, very confident about what this government here doing. I mean, I don't want to believe that we are going to go in war, and that would really be a big problem for us.
It's notable that last week on Courthouse Square, peace was a cause for celebration as America and the world marked the 50th anniversary of Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech, and that this week ends with Americans hoping for a peaceful solution to the Syrian crisis. You're listening to WISO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO. Thanks for joining us this Sunday morning. I'm Jerry Kenny. United Rehabilitation Services of Greater Dayton has a mission to enhance the quality of life for infants, children, and adults with disabilities. Currently, they're serving people with cerebral palsy, Down syndrome, muscular dystrophy, autism, Alzheimer's, and many other special needs. One of the ways URS is helping their clients is through its gardening program. The Garden offers occupational and physical therapy for adults who want to get involved, and where advanced technologies play a large part in the assistance of those with special needs, the Garden is a simpler, more natural therapy. Babette Flanc, or Bobby as clients here call her, is a master gardener. She's been with URS as a volunteer since she taught her first class in 2004.
Well, to begin with, the clients wanted to raise their own vegetables, and they wanted flowers, and we wanted it near the entrance to their classroom, so we started building the garden step by step.
And how's the response been?
They love the garden. It is their garden. And they come out here.
Bobby shows me the garden, which runs along the side of the URS building. Clients in the activity room can look out the windows and see the garden at any time.
Now, right here, we're looking at our rain garden.
There's a sitting area that's wheelchair accessible, and Bobby says they've taken extra care to make sure that what's grown in the garden is edible, like herbs and daylilies.
And to begin, before we ever did the garden, we did a chemical test, soil testing, to make sure there was no chemicals in here that they could eat.
So much of what you're growing in here can be picked right off the vine.
Yes, correct. It is ready to eat. Now we have corn that they picked last week, corn on the cob. We have pumpkins that are ripening.
The garden is full of flowers, and most of the vegetables go into the kitchen. And so URS clients are doing what many consumers aren't doing, growing the food they eat.
The kitchen can come out and pick any of the tomatoes or the carrots. We have Swiss chard. We did have lettuce, but it's too hot now for the lettuce. We have cucumbers, green beans, green peppers, eggplant, broccoli, and they use it for salads in the kitchen. Over here across the field, okay, here's the tomatoes. But over there, they wanted pumpkins and corn this year. Well, our garden doesn't have enough space, so we made a lasagna garden this year. It's a system of layering compost, newspapers. We used the grass, and you used different layers. And it's a system of layering, and you plant right in the same year.
Bobby is the type of volunteer that organizations like URS strive to find. She's dedicated and cares deeply about the work she's doing here. Work that she says isn't work. And as we head out to see the lasagna garden, Bobby tells me why this is important to her.
When I was a child, I was severely third-degree burns on my feet, and I was in the hospital for years, said I'd never walk. Well, one day I ran, and I have never stopped running. And the clients just pull my heart, and I can relate with them, and I love being here.
And what made you run that day?
They don't know. I just took off. The volunteers would come in and do things with you, take you places, and you wouldn't be stuck in your chair all day. And I learned to appreciate the volunteer service.
Do you mind if I ask about your life outside of United Rehabilitation Services, where you live and your family?
Okay, I live in Huber Heights. I'm retired from Wright-Patterson. I ran a restaurant 30 years, and I'm married to a military retired gentleman, and we just live close to the neighborhood.
Great, and do you have a garden at home?
Yes, lots of tomatoes.
In 2008, Bobby and the clients she works with received the Volunteer Project Excellence Award from Ohio State University Extension. URS has also awarded Bobette with the Barry Distinguished Service Award for her dedication.
Your pumpkins are coming along. Last time I was out here, they're just tiny little things.
Near the end of our tour, URS Executive Director Dennis Grant joins us at the Lasagna Garden, so I ask for his take on the gardening program.
Well, you know, Jerry, we work with thousands of children and adults with disabilities every year, and for the adults with disabilities who are involved with this garden, this gives them an opportunity not just to enjoy gardening and to learn about how to plant and grow vegetables and flowers, but it also gives them a chance to prepare meals, to learn about measuring, following step-by-step instructions through recipes, and then to enjoy the kind of the fruits of their labor. And they even sell some of these products at their little shop inside. So, you know, it's just, it has so many aspects that benefit our clients because everyone here has an individualized plan to achieve goals, and they set those themselves with our staff. And this has just been a way to use it as a multifaceted program from outside to inside. And it's, we just really love it, and we really appreciate the support of Bobette and all the volunteers who participate.
On September 21st, URS will hold their 10th annual Rubber Duck Regatta. It's one of their biggest fundraisers of the year, and some of the proceeds from that event support the Garden Project. You can find out more about the regatta at ursdayton.org. You're listening to WISO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO. Last week, the Mental Health and Recovery Board of Clark, Greene, and Madison counties wrapped up a week of crisis intervention team training for police officers in those counties. Dr. Kent Youngman says this is the eighth year the Mental Health and Recovery Board has offered the training, a 40-hour course designed for law enforcement officer and community safety with a focus on mental health and addiction services.
And we do that by educating law enforcement officers in a number of different ways relating to mental health and addiction services and the kinds of things that they may have run into in the community when they encounter a person that may be dealing with one of those two concerns.
There have actually been a number of incidents here in Yellow Springs and Greene County that maybe highlight the importance of training like this.
Yes, there have been. One of the things that we know is if a person is suffering from a mental illness, the traditional ways in which a law enforcement officer might approach that person that would work for a person that does not have that sort of illness may not work well for a person that has a mental illness. So, for example, the overwhelming sort of command and control approach that would typically cause a person to, you know, settle down and comply with the officer's requests, in this case, might actually cause the situation to become more volatile. And so we train officers to look for those signs and then moderate their approach so that it has a safe outcome for everyone.
Do you know if with the three counties that are represented by your organization, if those numbers of incidents have risen recently, or is there a trend that you can point to?
I don't know that we can point to a specific trend. We know that when we have an event in the community, and they've been able to identify that. For example, in many cases, people know the folks in the community that that live there that may have a mental illness. And so when that comes about, they tend to try to send a CIT-trained officer to deal with the situation so that it de-escalates. But when we talk to officers, they tell us that it's a common occurrence for them to encounter folks in the community that either have a mental illness or that may be intoxicated.
And what do you suggest for communities facing that situation?
First of all, put together a CIT program. We've trained about 175 officers over the total time that this has been in place, and there's many resources available. It requires a commitment, and it's a partnership, but absolutely train officers. And then within the law enforcement ranks, try to make sure those folks are available on all shifts, and when possible, deploy them to deal with the situation to help defuse it before it becomes more volatile and might get out of control.
We're talking about some broader aspects of mental illness, but also talking about some very specific things like suicide prevention, mm-hmm. emotional survival, and surviving trauma.
Yes, that's something that we've included in the last couple of years, specifically related to officers. We know that when officers are involved in traumatic experiences, that they experience some of that trauma. And so by doing some training and by heightening awareness around that, what we're saying is we want officers and their departments to help take care of those folks so that it benefits them personally, but it also benefits them in the community. And then suicide prevention awareness. We have suicide prevention coalitions in all three of our counties, and we try to raise awareness and education and let people know that when you see someone that you think may have some of those concerns or that you have a concern for them, there are some specific steps that you can take and ways to try to keep them safe.
Part of the crisis intervention team training are ride-alongs with mental health case managers and CIT officers. Can you tell me a little bit about those experiences?
Sure. We pair up police officers with what we would refer to as our case managers. These are the folks that work in the community, that go into folks' homes. They help them with day-to-day activities, but they also try to make sure they're getting the services that they need. And so we pair up the officers with the case managers, and they go with them to visit people in the community. We also pair up case managers and other mental health professionals with law enforcement, and so they ride along with them in a particular shift. And we frequently hear that the two components that have the most impact on officers are the panel with family members, so these are family members who have a person in their home with mental illness, and the ride-alongs with case managers. So those are real eye-opening experiences for them.
You also talk about senior-specific issues. Highlight those issues for us.
Sure. We bring in folks from the senior services organizations to talk with officers. There is a real concern around elder abuse. People that live in their homes that may not be taken care of well or may be exploited in some way or other, and the isolation that goes along with that. And so we bring in people from various organizations in Clark County. It's Elderly United, and there are others in the other communities, to talk about elder-specific kinds of things. The idea there is that if an officer is called out to a home, that they become aware of the fact that, you know, we just have to be careful and pay attention to looking at whether or not there could be a potential abuse or neglect issue, and if so, how to make the appropriate referrals and get services in. One of the new elements that is just emerging, or one of the new resources, is our crisis respite program for youth that we received a grant for just in the past few months, and we're bringing that program up. So this is a place for youth to be able to be for a period of time to give their families the ability to kind of recoup and refocus and see what services need to be in place. And the hope there is, number one, we reduce incidences of violence, but also figure out ways to keep kids local and keep them in their homes if at all possible and not have to send them somewhere for residential-type services.
And these are cases where the youth have gotten into some sort of trouble or there are other problems, say, with maybe the parents?
Sure, it could be any of those things. youth that are displaying behavioral disturbances, youth that that may be in some legal trouble. But these are situations where, because of the behavioral health concerns, we're trying to put a package of services together so that the youth can stay in their community, stay at home if that's safe and possible, and continue to be involved in the normal activities, but do it in a safe way in which services are really wrapped around them. Not only is that more cost-effective to do, but when done well, it has very good long-term outcomes for their mental health.
Dr. Kat Youngman with Mental Health and Recovery Board of Clark, Greene, and Madison Counties. Thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it.
That's it for this edition of WISO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO, Yellow Springs, Dayton, Springfield, and online at wyso.org. WYSO is a community service of Antioch College for the Miami Valley and beyond. We hope to see all of you downtown this evening at 6 o'clock, Riverscape Metro Park, for WYSO's summer concert. It's free and open to the public. Bring a chair, and we'll see you there. Coming up next on WYSO, The Book Nook.